The first meeting of National Cabinet since the Prime Minister conceded the vaccine rollout was beset by problems has stopped short of making any significant changes to the program. Commonwealth, state and territory leaders agreed vaccinating the most vulnerable remains the priority and that GPs are best placed to manage the bulk of the program, supplemented by mass vaccination centres. It comes as New South Wales authorities investigate the spread of coronavirus between rooms inside the hotel quarantine system. Yes, it's happened again. And for more, I spoke earlier with Professor Mary Louise McClaws, an expert in infectious diseases at the University of New South Wales, and asked what this latest infection tells us about our quarantine system.
David, it's a continued failure ever since we started to repurpose hotels for quarantine. And, of course, the air change isn't high enough, particularly when you get families of three or four in a room. And also you've got a problem with not identifying somebody as being positive fast enough because they only get tested twice.
I was in one of the rooms at Edina on the 12th floor, in fact, just a few months ago with my family for quarantine coming back into the country. It seemed to be a fairly tight system, but there were no requirements to, for example, keep windows open, exchange air, anything like that. Should there be?
Yes, there must be, because the rooms in hotels act as a positive air pressure room instead of a negative one. So when you're opening the doors, the air will rush out of the guest room into the corridor. And those corridors in hotels are not developed so that they also have good air change. So it's rushing into fairly much a dead space, and then it sits there. And if you've got somebody who hasn't worn a face shield protecting their eyes or has move their mask under their chin to give themselves a bit of respite, they can, of course, become infected very easily.
So can this be rectified? Can we shift the rooms, for example, to negative pressure in a cost-effective way? Or is it time to look at other solutions, other ways of quarantining people?
I'm not sure you can do it in a cost-effective way. Certainly in 2003, the SARS-designated hospital, the Princess Margaret Hospital in Hong Kong, repurposed every room as a negative air pressure room and brought in HEPA filters. The better effort would be, one, improving testing with rapid antigen testing in between the PCR testing, which is supposed to be the gold standard. But the rapid antigen test will tell you within 15 minutes whether you've got a traveller who's in the middle of becoming sick but not yet showing signs and symptoms and sick enough to ask for a test. And then secondly, we need to realise that, of course, as soon as you do identify them as positive, they need to be moved out much faster than when they become symptomatic. But one of the issues is, David, is that this is not going to be the last pandemic. And we really do need to look at Howard Spring as the exemplar and have a look at why it works. It works because it's mostly open air. It's a single story and people can walk outside and they probably have less anxiety and mental health issues because they can at least get out into the atmosphere and enjoy the sun.
Do you think the government is taking the spread via aerosol seriously enough?
I don't think they are, David. They've been so slow. We've had so many outbreaks that are related to quarantine and then breaches into the community. It's not fair to the community because they've done everything that the authorities have asked of them. So they really do need to take air particles, small particles, seriously. And we've known for many decades now that flu, which is produced as small and large particles, can travel 2.6 metres, not just 1 metre or 1.5 metres. These things can travel a long distance. So you really do need good air change and a good design of a quarantine facility to ensure that you're not placing anybody in the room next to you at risk if they're negative and you've got a positive case in the room next to them.
National Cabinet has met today to reset the problem-plagued vaccine rollout. What do you think needs to be done there?
So now the government is saying anybody under 50 now should have Pfizer. They are the ones that we need to protect as soon as possible. So if we can roll out at a very rapid pace, we need to protect them, because of course we've seen with the doctor getting COVID and the nurse, who got it next? People in that age group of the 20 to 49. So we need to open it up to everybody who also want, who can have AstraZeneca, so they don't have a medical condition and they're not hesitant about the AstraZeneca.
Should we save the Pfizer doses for those under 50?
We should save the Pfizer dose for anybody under 50 because they are at the greatest risk of acquiring it and spreading it. The over 70s who have the greatest burden of hospitalization and death are not going to acquire COVID if our younger group don't get it and spread it. Once they're done, the older, more vulnerable group will be protected by this barrier. And then the next group that causes most of the grief of transmission are the 20 to 39-year-olds. So they need to get Pfizer. And then for everybody else with AstraZeneca, just get rid of the phases and just say, you want the vaccine, turn up. What you'll get, David, is a classic example of behavior. The early adopters will turn up, then the later adopters will see the early adopters are okay, and they'll turn up. Those that are more hesitant may eventually come on board, but they need to be given an option, either, you know, Pfizer if they're young enough, or Novavax if they're a bit older, because you don't shame them by saying, well, if you don't get vaccinated, it's your problem. You try to give them a bit of choice, and then I think we'll get most people vaccinated.
Professor Mary Louise McClaws, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, David.